It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the movie Black Panther will be the first major superhero movie with an African protagonist and a mostly African and African-American cast. We talk about what that representation means for audiences around the United States. First, the suspect behind yesterday's school shooting in Parkland, Florida, was ordered held without bond today on 17 counts of premeditated murder. As the story unfolded over the last 24 hours, a portrait of the alleged perpetrator has started to emerge. Online, the 19-year-old suspect frequently posed with weapons on Instagram and has reported to the FBI over comments he made on the video channel YouTube. Today, the Anti-Defamation League said that it had confirmed that the suspect was a member of a Florida-based white nationalist group and had trained with them. Brian Levin is a professor of criminal justice and director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino. Brian, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Brian, from what we know at this point, and of course details still keep coming in the days after a tragedy like this, what are your thoughts based on what we know now?
Well, it's unfortunate that we have the confluence of two terrible things going on in our society. One are these mass shootings, in particular at schools, and the other comes from the story that you just broke of my colleagues at the ADL finding that this particular assailant had connections to a white supremacist group, the Republic of Florida.
What do we know about violent activity associated with groups like that one?
Great question. And, you know, and what we have, unfortunately, over the last few years, it is a string of homicides done by people in their 20s or early 30s, people who are unstable, disenfranchised, who got vacuumed in to the white nationalist movement. And we've seen an emboldenment of these groups, not only with leafleting on college campuses and spreading banners across interstates, as they're doing here in California and elsewhere in the country, but also something else, and bear with me on this. 36% of Americans say whites are under attack, and about 14 to 16% say that whites are under attack and people of color aren't. So we're dealing at a time now where young people are reporting very high rates of depression with respect to social surveys, and we have unstable time bombs who are being harnessed by these hate groups. And we've seen killings just recently in New Mexico involving a school shooting and a bigot, as well as apparently what we saw in Florida. So we've had a string of homicides that have been taking place, and what I think that is being missed is we spend a lot of time, as does our center, on violent Salafist jihadists. But our center has said we have the most diverse threat matrix that we've had in some time. And it's not only violent Salafist jihadists, it's also people from the ultra-far-right, alt-right, white supremacist, and anti-government world as well.
When we look at federal anti-terrorism efforts, do you see much focus on these groups on the extreme right, or are we focused more on the, as you mentioned, Salafist Islam threat?
I think, unfortunately, we are looking at only one part of the threat matrix when we should spend more attention looking at the diverse threat matrix that we have, which is the most diverse that we've had in decades and includes this kind of hybrid of unstable, disenfranchised people who are prone to violence in general and then catapulted to it by these ideologies and subcultures. And let me just give you an example. A group that I met with last week here in Los Angeles, Life After Hate, had a six-figure grant that was given to them and then rescinded with the new administration. We've also seen data come out from the government which tilts the picture more toward international terrorism and violent Salafist jihadists, which are indeed a threat. This is all fluid at this time as we're seeing changes in Syria, but also here domestically, we have a very divided, polarized, and politically entrenched populace. And one of the things that our research has shown is that we've seen violence increase among around election time. We've also seen more white nationalist mega rallies, those rallies of over 100 or more, in the last 2 to 3 years than we saw in the last 10 to 20, as well as greater internet involvement, which targets a younger demographic, which includes students and college students.
Talking to Brian Levin from the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University San Bernardino about yesterday's mass shooting at a Florida school. Brian, let's talk about prevention. And it seems like this would be really hard to do, even if you profiled, narrowing down to young, white, with extremist views, depressed, with pictures with guns on social media. Most of the people, even fitting that fairly narrow category, are probably never going to be involved in this kind of violence, right? So how do you figure out who the real positives are, the one that you have to focus on if you're in law enforcement?
Well, it's really hard, and the Secret Service tried to attempt to come up with a profile. There really isn't one single profile, but there are certain characteristics that we look at. As you said, people who feel they're disenfranchised, people who talk about violence. The other thing, too, that I think is a bit of a myth is that people snap. Oftentimes, this occurs in an incremental yet firm trajectory over time. And as we saw, this particular assailant actually posted in social media last year about school shootings. So I think what we have to do is make sure that if, as a citizen did in Mississippi, if you see something, say something. But I also think we have to have greater interagency coordination with respect to these kind of things, particularly because this assailant posted under his own name.
Do you see similarities between the Salafist jihadist terrorist attacks that we see sometimes and white supremacist ones, similar tactics, similar run-ups, similar profiles or types of people who go a very different way ideologically but maybe end up in the same place committing an act of violence?
That's a great question. And one of the things that our center does, because we look at all these different groups, is look at these commonalities. The first thing I would say is there's a targeting of a younger male demographic. There's also targeting of females, but in different ways. Also, these groups maintain training camps, whether it's in Syria or in Texas or in Florida, as we've seen. We had a homicide here in Southern California where it turned out that the assailant allegedly went to a training camp by a neo-Nazi group. The other thing is look at the groups and whether they are in-group oriented and encourage a subculture of violence, either rhetorically or through training. And lastly, if people become withdrawn and they seem to have a fixation with weaponry, one last thing that we see is a lot of times these groups have a promise of machismo and some kind of misogyny associated as well. The role of the warrior male protecting females from this culture of depravity. And that's true whether it's the Daesh partisans or people in the Klan and white supremacist and neo-Nazi world as well.
Brian, I wonder if you can leave us with some thoughts on how to talk about cases like this in the media. Because I've seen arguments that when you use words like shooter or lone wolf, that can be glamorizing. When you focus on new records in body counts and something like that, that inspires other people of similar mindsets to try to top that, which is bizarre, but apparently happens. How do you want to see us talk about this?
What I think is to do what you're doing, to tone down some of the rhetoric which makes these people look like they're characters out of a James Bond movie. In fact, often they're the opposite. These are people who are hobbled by some kind of life event, some kind of failure in relationships, as well as lack of access, and what I mean is they may not seek it out, to mental health clinicians. And once you connect those people with deadly weapons, we have a problem. And I think we have to look at it in a multifaceted, non-ideological manner. Otherwise, this is going to continue. One last thing. Our community survived this, and so will Parkland. But these families that are affected, it never fully heals. It never does.
Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Brian Levin, professor of criminal justice and director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino. He joined us to talk about the mass shooting at a Florida school yesterday and the suspect's ties to a white nationalist group in that state.